It's an underwater drone for the wannabe Jacques Cousteau. On this edition of Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with the founder of a drone company that wants to put underwater research into the hands of, well, into the hands of anyone with a sense of adventure. From gold treasure to surprising sea creatures to sunken ships, Berkeley's Trident Company is bringing affordable drone technology not only to schools, but also to any fan of citizen science.
Eric Stackpole was an intern at NASA Ames in Mountain View before he realized that exploring the ocean would be more exciting than working on spacecrafts. He also had a touch of gold fever. You may have heard the old saw that we know more about deep space than we do about the deep ocean. Well, we don't really know how big space is, so that's no place to start. But we do know more people have been to the moon than have seen the Marianas Trench. Here's part of my chat with Eric Stackpole, co-founder of OpenROV and the Trident underwater drone. He just finished telling me a gold rush story that compelled him to build the Trident drone. That's a terribly interesting story. As I was listening to it and being compelled by it, I'm reminded of The Treasure of Sierra Madre. I might think about Moby Dick. Neither of those really ended that well, Eric, so for our anti-hero. So just a word of warning. But you have a drone to help you not, you know, follow that white whale.
If it's dirty, dangerous, dull, or distant, it's better to have a robot do it.
Hey, that's a great one. Let's talk about other use cases for the Trident, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Because I know that you mentioned you've been exploring in the bay. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for in the bay? Just to get around, check it out?
Well, I do love the idea of just kind of poking around. You never know what you're going to find. But there are some stories that have really been compelling to me over the years. One that I read about that was really interesting is the story of the SS San Rafael, the steamer San Rafael.
Oh, yes.
This is a steamship that was built in the 1800s and sank in 1901. After colliding with another steamship right off of Alcatraz. It was a dead fog on a Sunday night. Basically, the two ships were going very slowly, but they didn't see each other. And one of them, the San Rafael, got hit broadside and sunk over the course of about 20 minutes. Most of the passengers made it off. A few did die. Mm. They say probably around 5 people died. The ship sank, and no one's seen it yet. There's a almost 200-foot-long steamship right off of Alcatraz, and no one's seen it since 1901. Researching this was a really interesting project in itself. You know, you think that you can look everything up online, and I had this revelation that maybe a revelation for other people in my generation. I'm joking a little bit, but it turns out that not all information that exists is on the internet.
Not yet. But yeah, you're right. There's a gap. There's a knowledge gap.
So I was going to the Marin Historical Society and looking at all these old original newspapers from 1901, and you know, the way they're describing this is that, you know, it was kind of like the Titanic of that era for San Francisco. You know, they're describing when the ship that everyone went onto as the other one was sinking, as it came back into port in San Francisco, the way they described it was like, you know, people had, you know, broken limbs that were gushing out blood, and children were not able to find their parents. Women were leaving the ship without their hats.
Oh my gosh. It was just tragedy.
Yeah.
Mayhem.
It's just this crazy story that's kind of got lost in time because just a few years later, the 1906 earthquake happened.
Right. Yeah.
So we wanted to go find this ship, and we had a rough idea where it was. We looked at all these accounts, you know, sometimes handwritten accounts from people who were on board when it happened. We went out onto the bay to try to find it. We've actually gone a few times now, and it's really hard to find because the bay has shifted so much since then. There have been dredging operations and all that. But we have found a few objects that seem like they could be it with a side scan sonar, and we're waiting to verify those with the vehicle.
Yeah, it'll be fun when you find it, but the search also sounds pretty compelling as well.
Exactly. You know, in the movie industry, they call this the MacGuffin. You know, you go out, you have this excuse, you know, oh, what's in the box? And that's the whole rest of the movie. And by the end, you forget that they're even looking for a box.
Right.
There's reported to be something on the order of 200 shipwrecks in San Francisco Bay alone, you know, and we've yet to even look at any of them specifically, but almost every dive we go on, we find something else.
You have a piece of hardware that has a lot of scientific capability. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it looks pretty fun. So when you go out with your team, do you guys have to thumb wrestle over who gets to drive?
I mean, that's a great thing of co-founding the company. I feel like I have a little more clout. No, we certainly have a lot of people who really love just doing this. I mean, at OpenROV, we have never hired someone who is looking for a job. We hire people who are looking for an adventure.
Again, let's go back to the price point. At the $1,500 level, you have democratized the opportunity for discovery. I'm wondering, are there other use cases on that end that are not necessarily ones that you control, other projects?
What excites me the most is the things that we're not planning this will be used for. You know, obviously, there are a ton of people who are in the marine industries and things like that who want to use this. There are a lot of people, you know, who use these for inspecting dams and bridges who want to, you know, we sell them to police departments and government organizations that, you know, want to look for evidence. There's search and recovery for drowning victims, you know, stuff like that. And then there's a ton of people in, you know, kind of there are three big markets I like to think about, you know, recreational scuba divers, recreational boaters, recreational fishermen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's like 100 million of those people combined.
Right.
And they're very active and they're really interested in, you know, boaters checking their anchor chain or looking at their prop, or fishermen seeing why all the fish come from that one spot, or scuba divers seeing, you know, what that place is going to be like to dive before they commit the all the energy to doing that.
Off mic, when you were coming in, you mentioned Lake Merritt, which is a local lake here.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
in Oakland. And I didn't let you finish the story because it started off so good. So let's start again. So you have another use case, but this one is, I think, what, through a high school?
A lot of people in our community who want to use the ROV for educational purposes, and I think that's great. One such instance is pretty local, actually, is Oakland High School, you know, over in Oakland. They got one of our ROV kits. We call it the Open ROV 2.8. As kind of a class project to learn about engineering and teamwork and all that stuff, they put this together over the course of a few weeks. You know, I think a lot of the students at the high school level and, you know, at Oakland High School, you know, they're not going out to all these really amazing places, but, you know, they can't go on a trip to Hawaii or something like that, but they wanted to play with their ROV. You know, we have the same problem in Berkeley. You know, where do you go? And so they said, well, let's just take it to Lake Merritt. I mean, you'd expect to find, you know, like, I don't know, like trash and murder weapons and I don't know what in Lake
right.
Merritt. It just seems like it's kind of a gross thing right in the middle of the city. What you'd expect underneath.
It's basically Lake Merritt exists to attract the students towards it.
Yes.
Right.
And so they put this in not knowing what they would find and not really with high expectations. But within a few moments of putting the vehicle into the water, they saw this thing called a sea hare, which is this giant slug-looking creature. It's like it's almost like a foot long, and it's purple and pink polka dots, and it has these antennae sticking up, crawling along the bottom of the lake. You know, Lake Merritt is open to the bay.
Yeah, so it's a saltwater lake. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah,
and so here's this creature, and you know, we're able to look at this with a tool that they built themselves, and it's right in our backyard. My favorite stories are not the ones where you go to some really remote place and find some really exotic thing.
Right.
It's when it was right there under your nose the whole time, and all you needed was the right tool to see it.
My last question for you, Eric, because I know we're running a little tight on time. What about the ecological disruption or potential ecological disruption? Have you addressed any of that?
That's really important, and absolutely. We try to lean into that. You know, this is a new field. Underwater drones have not been a thing, and we're kind of paving the way. So we feel like we have a responsibility to get it started on the right foot. There are a lot of different things that you want to be cautious about. One of the things, for an example, though, is microbial transportation. It's something we're really concerned with. Just like scuba divers face, if you take your equipment to one place and then you move your equipment to a different spot, you might bring some critters with you that don't belong in the new spot. So, you know, we've already been a part of several published papers and things talking about, you know, after you dive your vehicle, you know, how you should rinse it. You know, just put it in slightly bleachy or chlorinated water. You know, just good best practices.
Right.
That also applies to, you know, visiting sensitive environmental areas or archaeological areas. You know, we want to make sure we start this off on the right foot. So this ends up being a tool that helps our understanding of, you know, the fragile parts of our planet rather than disrupting them.
So you're sharing some ecological best practices at point of sale, or is it follow-ups, or can somebody reach out to your team with these kind of questions?
Yeah, well, all of those. You know, in our instruction manual, we'll have some descriptions of best practices. Whenever we do dives, we try to showcase, you know, what we're doing to make sure we do it the right way. And of course, if people are curious about a particular thing they want to do, they can always ask us.
We have a cool video that your team sent over. Can you describe it? It's on YouTube. I believe it was Lake Tahoe.
Oh, yeah. We went to go look at the steamer Tahoe, this 160-foot-long steamship. And 400 feet of water in Lake Tahoe, and it was awesome.
That's pretty deep.
It's really deep. I mean, the
because you said in the bay you were going 60 feet deep, right?
Yeah.
And so 400 feet in Lake Tahoe, that's impressive.
That one was with one of our kits. The kits are extremely capable, you know, and we had modified it to have a slightly thicker plastic shell that makes it able to go a little bit deeper than the 100-meter depth mm-hmm. limit they normally have. The ship was built in the 1800s, brought by train and mule to the lake, then sank in 1940, deliberately scuttled because the owners saw it falling apart and they wanted to, you know, go in a noble way. And they missed their location where they wanted to sink it, and it slid down this hill into 400 feet of water and has hardly been seen since.
It's a fascinating video. It's also up on facebook.com/techonomicsradio. What's your website?
You can visit us by going to openrov.com.
We'll have links to all of your contacts, and if you want to contact Eric or ask a question, it's all available on our page at kgoradio.com/techonomics as well. Is there something that I missed that you wanted to talk about?
I think that you pretty much hit on the general picture of what we're doing, but I just really like talking about that. You know, we are trying to not just create a product, but create a movement. You know, exploration has generally been done only by people who are funded. You know, it's been National Geographic. It's been these big expeditions.
James Cameron.
Exactly. We want to bring that to the people, you know. So what we're hoping to do is ignite this new movement where the newest, greatest discoveries are being made by everyday people like you and me. You know, we believe that this is the future of exploration, and that's what we're trying to work toward.
Eric, it's a great effort. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing it. We hope to have you back soon. That was Eric Stackpole, co-founder of underwater drone company Open ROV. We have links to Open ROV and other resources at kgoradio.com/Techonomics and at facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. We have video links of the Trident underwater drone in action. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.